You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. This time we want to talk about business email compromise scams, or also known as bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches.
BEC.
BEC.
I spent way too much time working at McDonald's.
As did I.
Yeah. We were talking yesterday. Realized that. So you said you were a really bad grill person.
I was a bad grill person, yes.
Okay, so I've got a question, because am I correct that you were raised in Canada, right?
I was raised in Canada, yes.
Okay. Still is. So,
Is this a trick question?
No. The reason is, okay, so when I started, I have a twin brother. So my brother and I started, and down south where I lived, if you started at McDonald's, you started on the grill. You were in the back, or the fry.
That's where I started, never left.
A fry guy.
But because my brother and I started the same day and we looked alike, they put me on the register. So I actually started on the register, okay? So we were taught, and this is what I want to know, if in Canada you were taught
yes.
the same thing.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that you had the clamshell grills where the grill was that closed down on top of the hamburgers, right? The top and bottom were hot.
No, I'm from a previous generation.
Oh, okay.
We had just a flat stainless steel grill. We had to put the burgers on, sear them, the timers.
So we had that on the other side, but the burgers were cooked where it closed down on top. And both
the buns had a toaster thing that
So we were taught that within the first couple hours of somebody working on the grill, your job, if you were training them, was to bump their elbows so they touched the grill and burned themselves. And the reason for it was, it sounds awful, and I will not acknowledge having ever done it, but the reason was that people were so afraid of the grill that they would, they'd be very slow, but you were going to burn yourself no matter what.
Yeah.
And if you were in that mode of, oh my God, I'm going to burn myself. Oh my God, I'm going to burn myself. You would actually burn yourself worse because you wouldn't react fast enough. Whereas if you got bumped and touched it, you would pull your hand back really fast and it would barely get red. Right. But it sounded so horrible. And so I was curious if this was just something.
I don't remember being taught that. That must have been something that they learned after I was there, right?
But maybe.
I remember feeling like burning my fingertips on because you had to sometimes. Oh, yeah. Well, in our case where we had to actually touch the burgers with your hands sometimes to flip them or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was, second degree burns every day. So
Scott, I don't think you and I are that much different in age.
Oh, well, you never know.
Okay. I'm 48. You don't have to say how old you are. I'm just going to throw it out. I'm 48. I started when I was at McDonald's when I was 14.
Okay. Well, I started when I was 16.
Okay.
You guys are old.
But I'm more than a decade older than Kevin, put it that way.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't realize that. You look good.
Well, thank you, sir.
Well, there you have it, folks.
What are we? Is that all we're going to talk about today?
Working at
McDonald's.
Well, the reference is BEC. When I was at McDonald's, it was the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. They were called. They just said BEC on the screens, and the registers, and everything else like that. So, business email compromise. I do want to qualify that most people I talk to think of business email compromise as like C-level execs, and they don't really think about normal people. Like business email, it doesn't matter what level you are in the company. You're a target for this. I know that when I was at Engardians, we took over an entire airline during a pen test because we reset the password of a baggage handler. And
wow.
We got access to the baggage handler's email and VPN credentials because they were the same. But and from that email, we were able to pivot and take complete control of everything. We had access to – let's just go with everything.
Now, when we mean it, I think in the context that a lot of people understand business email compromise, usually has something to do with financial crime.
Right? So it's a really good point, Tom, because I was going to raise – the first thing I was going to say is, what is your definition of business email compromise? Because there are a lot of different ways people use the term.
Yeah.
To so if you're talking about financial, yeah, that's certainly one way. But if you think about, you know, just the basic meaning of the words, business email compromise means I'm compromising the business processes that involve or that rely on email. And so you can actually make it quite a broad scope. But yeah, the first, I think the first big incidents is where it occurred was in financial, usually accounts payable, right? It would be a fake invoice or the other one that was very common, you know, 6-7 years ago when I first heard about it probably was where the executive would be impersonated, sending an email to the accounts payable person saying, "Hey, I'm working on this secret project with a new partner and it's confidential. If anything gets out, we could be sued. So you can't tell anybody. And please make a payment of $480,000 to this account." and they did.
Yeah. I've always treated it as the definition is the attacker is compromising the credentials to access the person's email.
So they're literally hacking the email. Yeah.
Literally hacking their access to the email. And because of that, they have access to all of those business I don't know about you, but I was always taught growing up in corporate America was you keep every email because somebody's going to say they didn't send you something. Like, don't delete anything because you never know, which of course, you know, that backfired on Enron. But
well, that's the risk, right? Now it's all retention periods. Well,
and not just retention. You're absolutely right with retention. But like I would, as a pen tester, I regularly gain access to somebody's email account with permission. And what I do is I go to the oldest emails on there. Because the first set of emails you get when you join a company are the ones that activate your account, register,
all the access.
And even if those passwords don't work anymore, even though those links don't work anymore to register the account, it still shows me, here's where HR is. Here's where the central SharePoint system is. And because those emails,
all the orientation stuff.
Yeah, all the orientation stuff. It gives you all that information. And as an attacker, that information, it makes it much easier for me to laterally move through the organization. Because the details there. And then, of course, I can leverage that access to the email account to social engineer the next person, right? Like that baggage handler I was talking about. You know, one of the things we did was wrote to the help desk from the baggage handler's account.
Yeah.
And got access to further systems and stuff that way.
So I think it used to be viral movement. It used to be really common because before the days in the era before multi-factor authentication, but after the beginning of remote or remote connections, right? Outlook web access probably was the first case where, you know, you could access some company's web or email via the web with only a password. And so if you stole their password from, you know, some cheap site and they reused it on the corporate account, then you could be in with a password. And once you're in, it's still a problem, right? Even with multi-factor authentication, there are accounts being hacked all the time. But it's so convincing when an attacker can use somebody's real account and then forward a thread to somebody that's legitimate and say, oh, by the way, how about this? So that's the most insidious kind of business email compromise, I would think.
Yeah. And it's so it's interesting to note, I pulled up some statistics. The FBI actually released data about this from 2020 and said $1.8 billion worth of losses were incurred because of BEC scams targeting.
That's probably not even all of them.
It's probably not all of them, right? But this is mainly small and medium-sized businesses, which is interesting.
It makes total sense because the small businesses don't have the business processes to authenticate and authorize payments and things like that, right?
Well, and another part of that, in my opinion, is you're absolutely correct that they don't have the processes the large companies do. But they also have elevated privileges, right? Because you're a small business, you wear different hats. It's very common in the smaller business that multiple people have access to things like the bank account, right? Because, you know, I'm the owner of this business and, you know, I know like, for example, my wife, when we moved up here in Jacksonville, she worked at this florist. She wanted a, you know, a thing to do, you know, and she started working with this florist and balloon place. Very weird, but, and she had access to the bank account for the business. She wasn't an owner of the business. She was just the cashier, but it was common for the owner to not be there. And Denise would have to go to the bank and get change and deposit stuff and everything else like that. So she had elevated privileges that you would never think. You go into a business and there's a cashier sitting there and you think to yourself, man, I wonder if they have access to the bank account. The answer would be maybe.
Yeah. And what's interesting is it kind of requires an attacker to decide on what market he's in, right? Is he going to go after small businesses and leverage those, you know, elevated credentials and less strong processes? Or is he going to go after big enterprises where there's a big reward and probably lots of authentication, but a lot of other potential types of things they could exploit?
Well, and one of the things that you get, we had this conversation yesterday here at the office. Bigger companies, quite often, while they have those big processes, because they're such a large company, it's easier to insert yourself into processes as the new person or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we got one of those invoices in the mail that said, hey, you owe us $289 for the domain secureideas.com. And it's an annual. Yeah. And if you look at it, it's not a bill. It's an ad trying to get us to switch to the scammer organization. And, you know,
well, the domain registrations are a big one, but it's a risk because you're not always going to get the person who actually registered the domain.
Right.
I guess unless it's actually in the domain record, right? You can just say, hey, please renew your domain this way.
Yeah.
Not the way you bought it, but this way.
And you compromise the email of somebody in the procurement department, and then you send a message from the procurement department to all of the vendors that they have. I mean, that's – email is, and I don't see any way to change this, nor do I think we should, but email is the core identifier and process for many of the critical business critical functions we do, right? It's all tied to our email address. It's all tied to, you know, we're playing around with HubSpot and learning how to use things there, and everything ties to, right? Okay, we'll send an email that does this, and that initiates the next step of this process. And
It takes in a different, I mean, the attacker has to do a bit of research, right? If you're using a single sign-on solution, right, that provides some protection, but it also provides other opportunities.
Yeah. And it's more likely, you know, small businesses don't have two-factor authentication and other things in place. I find it interesting too that I know this a BEC scam that has happened several times to my wife, who works in a small business. And, you know, they do research and, you know, cause she had questions like, well, how did they know that I'm the person that, you know, cause she's a business manager, right? Has access to accounts and things. How did they know? And I pulled up their business's website. I'm like, look, you're on the profile page as the business manager, or they look you up on LinkedIn, right?
LinkedIn,
and they can see,
just
based on your job function, that's how you got targeted. And she got a spoofed email that was from her boss, right? Yep. Saying, I need you to move this money into this account. Can you do it now? I'm on the road. Don't try calling me because I'm busy. But it tipped her off of like, my boss wouldn't send me an email like this.
Yeah.
She's like right down the hall. Why? She's not traveling, you know?
But that's where the pandemic has really come in, because now everybody's working from home and you don't really know where your coworkers are.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is how they get away with that.
You want your organization to be secure and compliant and to have a healthy culture, but your employees' lack of awareness makes you vulnerable to data theft, fraud, and compliance penalties. It's frustrating that the boring static training content that's being used today has failed to improve employees' ability to defend against cyber attacks. At ClickArmor, we know that without using gamification, it's extremely hard to get staff to understand how to avoid threats. Our gamified simulations and challenges have provided a 50% average improvement in thousands of employees' ability to spot phishing threats. go to clickarmor.ca/sharedsecurity to get your free gamified phishing assessment for up to 500 employees. You'll see quickly how gamified simulations can help your team be more resilient and compliant and help avoid costly ransomware and fraud incidents. Let ClickArmor help you go from being an underappreciated, stressed out fall guy to being an innovative leader who's the catalyst for greater productivity in your organization.
What can people do, especially in small, medium-sized businesses? What are some tips that maybe we can share to avoid from being a victim of this?
Yeah, I think the first tip and the most important one is to prevent your email from being compromised and leveraged this way. Use two-factor authentication, period, right? Like, turn on MFA. If you can do it with an authenticator app or something like that, great. If you can do it with a YubiKey or a token, even better. If you can't do anything else, SMS is an option, right? I know that is going to get me hate on Twitter.
No, we've had that debate. But it's better than nothing.
Yeah, we have. But
even Rachel says it's okay. So,
yeah, well, Rachel says it.
I'm probably putting words in her mouth she wouldn't want me to say, but she did sort of say, well, it depends on your risk profile.
But it's not even just risk profile. I know lots of people. I was just reading this great article the other day, and it's true. Like, phones are expensive, and we don't think about the expense of a phone because it's a normal part of our job, our lives, whatever, and we just budget for it. But there are lots of people who they don't have a phone for very long. They go through it. So turning on two-factor. On the flip side of it, if you're getting the email, I think the recommendation, the advice is, think through what you're about to do. And Tom, your wife's example is perfect, right? Your wife saying, my boss wouldn't send me this, right? Like, wait a minute. Just because the email says don't call me doesn't mean you shouldn't call them.
That's right.
I think that's true. And I think the best practice for any small business is still to have some level of formality around different thresholds of transactions. So if it's more than $1,000 or something like that, yeah, make sure either by text message or by direct voice call, if they say, don't call me, how about I text you? You know,
don't respond to the email though.
Don't do that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so for sure. But I think just having if any small business managers or owners are listening right now, I would just say have a process. It doesn't have to be a full, documented procedure, but just to say, above certain thresholds, make sure you get a secondary in-person authentication. And that's going to become even more important as we get deep fakes. We'll do another show on that, but there's certainly a lot more, impersonated voicemails that sound just like the person they're impersonating.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a problem.
Here at Secure Ideas, any one of our consultants, our traveling consultants, they're authorized to spend up to $5,000. And the reason that number, that's not a random number. The number was pulled from the idea of, if we were on site and something happened and both consultants lost a laptop, $5,000 would get us up and running like that, right? And that's what they're authorized to do.
Yeah.
Above that, you have to reach out to somebody. You have to talk to somebody. Yeah. If there's money being transferred out of a bank account, Denise handles that. She has access to that, but she talks to one of the other two owners to make sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she talks to us. It's not an email. Yep. It's not
exactly face to face.
Hey, Kevin.
And it's a good thing to do right away. Talk to all your employees and let them know that you've got this sort of guideline or principle in place. But every time you hire somebody new, make sure they know, because it's really becoming common now that new employees are getting targeted with impersonation scams, either by text or phone or things like that. Yep. And all they want to do is help, right? As a new employee, I don't want to be seen as failing. So you get a text from someone that says they're your boss and they're in town and they want you to go buy gift cards or something, so you really should educate your new employees on the fact that it doesn't matter how important the person seems to be, always take the time to check.
Yeah, and it's now that we're coming up on the holidays too, these types of scams are increasing. They always do around the holidays, just because they know people may be stressed at work, or they're trying to finish things up right before Christmas or what have you. So, you know, just keep in mind that, you know, sometimes these scams fluctuate just like phishing, right? After a major world event or other types of things, you may see an increase in these types of things.
Yeah. But really in terms of accounts payable, it's usually where the, you know, the most value probably escapes the company, right? When somebody makes a payment that's for an unauthorized, you know, invoice or something like that. So it's, there's tons of stories out there that you can use to educate people and just say, you know, this happens every day where you get an invoice and it looks legitimate. It's from a supplier we deal with, but it's, a, you know, it's not the actual invoice that we should be paying. There's one other thing that, that can happen too, and it's not, it's kind of sneakier. It is not a direct request for a payment of the invoice. It's a request to change your account, your bank account information. And that seems a little less dangerous, but of course, as soon as you change the account information to the attacker's account, then when the refund comes in or the payment goes through, it goes to them.
Yeah. You see a lot of wire transfers, you know, being made, payments, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the gift card one, I think we talked about, well, we had a whole episode on gift card scams.
Yeah, we did the gift cards.
But that was also another one that comes in through BEC as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crazy stuff. Well, all good advice, guys. Thank you for sharing your insights and, you know, even personal stories. I think that adds a lot of good context for people. Because like I said, when you see losses like $1.8 billion, and just increasing, I'm sure this year is going to be similar or worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Given everything going on in the world, it's a big deal.
Yeah. It's a great example of, you know, the need to balance the people, processes, and technologies.
Totally.
Right? I mean, technologically, we want to use that multi-factor authentication. Yeah. Process-wise, we need people to double check things, and you need to make people aware that those risks are out there and that anyone can be targeted.
That's right. Thanks for listening or watching. If you like this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. To catch all the latest from the podcast, visit us at sharedsecurity.net. Follow us on Mastodon at sharedsecurity, on Twitter at sharedsec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit.